You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Follow carries it up ice over the attacking line. Drop pass, Kopitar, rink wide, Kempe scores! 30th goal of the season for Adrian Kempe.
And welcome everybody to another On the Sly. Rob Brender, Jim Fox. Only a little bit more than 3 weeks to go in the NHL regular season, and so much for us to discuss. It's a fun time of year, isn't it?
It's fun if you're playing. It's fun if you're playing. It's fun if you're playing.
So you're not enjoying watching it?
It's a little tense. I don't necessarily think I look at it like a coach, but I'm sure coaches probably lose some sleep at this time of year. And I put myself in that category of just hoping, but at least when you play, you can do something about it. And right now, just watching.
Yeah, as we all are. And it's fun to a certain degree, right? Even if you don't have a dog in the fight and you don't root for any one of the teams, let's say, that's in this
playoff
chase.
I don't know if I'm calling it fun right now.
Yeah,
not calling it fun.
Jim's intense because the Kings are certainly in a battle right now for a playoff spot, but at least they're in the mix. And that's, you know, progress, right?
Well, it is. It's development. And it's exactly what they use, the tagline that everyone uses, play important games at the end. And they are finally doing that. So if the end result is the best we can hope for, we're going to be happy. If it's not, they still accomplish their goal for this year. Right now, that you're sitting in a spot, that's not enough. But development, improvement has been there.
No doubt about that. But knock on wood, nevertheless, I'm sure Jesse, who's sitting to my right, will do the same thing, hoping for a playoff spot this year. We all want to see playoff hockey here in LA. So as I said, a lot to get to. And we're going to try to go kind of section by section here. The general manager meetings, we haven't talked about this yet. They actually happened last week. So now we have some time to kind of go over some of the main topics that came up during those meetings. And by the way, it was the first time in a couple of years that many of the general managers met in person. It was down in Florida. It had been a couple of years, of course, because of COVID. And I don't think every GM was there, but a good portion of them were. And the commissioner, Gary Bettman, was there as well. And so some stuff did get done and some big topics were discussed. And again, we'll go through some of the bullet points here. Playoff officiating was one thing that came up during their meetings. As we know, there sometimes is a discrepancy between the way games are officiated during the regular season and during the playoffs. The league didn't make much of a comment, which is really no surprise. They're not going to talk down about their officiating, other than to say that we are always evaluating and always looking into it. Have you, number one, noticed a big discrepancy in the playoff officiating, and is there anything that you think the league can do?
I don't think there's much that can be done unless you change the way it's been done in the past as far as the traditional grind it out, you have to earn every inch of the ice, which leads to more confrontation, not necessarily fighting. It doesn't. It actually leads the other way because you don't want to take guys off the ice. But it leads to what I think everyone respects about hockey being different from other sports, which is when you get into that playoff and you get into a three overtime game and you get, well, yeah, it is officiated a little bit different. I've never been a referee. I can imagine this is what they're going through. Regular season, you see a play, you make a call. Playoffs, you see a play, and I think there's a beat that goes off in the head of the ref. Let me think about it. Let me think about it. Did I really see what I just saw? Type of thing, of course. And you just confirm it in your own mind. And that's why I think there are less penalties. And when Dean Lombardi was here, I'll start with him. He built his team for the playoffs. And he built it understanding that it would be officiated differently. The most interesting conversation, say this happens. Say the Kings play the Edmonton Oilers in the first round of the playoffs. Let's just say that happens. The most interesting conversations will be had before the series even starts. And how is Connor McDavid going to be treated? And you know what? It's a valid point, but I'm sure Edmonton is – the Kings don't have that star guy, right? So it's not going to be, you know, are they going to run Doughty? It's not going to be – it's how is Connor McDavid going to be treated? And Believe me, both sides will have a huge and long conversation, not with the officials themselves, but the supervisors and, of course, the people in Toronto.
Do they learn as a team, coaches, players, quickly, maybe even from game one, period one, okay, now they're going to officiate it?
It's too late.
It's too late at that point.
Too late. You have to know going in. You know going in it's going to be different. And if you don't and you get caught, that's your fault.
Do you prefer a game that is officiated with less penalties called, more penalties called during the postseason?
I prefer scoring chances to be looked at and enforced the same way it is during the regular season. Again, perhaps other types of plays that don't involve a scoring chance. Again, I think there's a, in the mind of the official, you go over it in your mind, which only takes 1 or 2 seconds. And I think it leads to a hesitation, which leads to perhaps not calling an elbow or a high, just something you, oh, did I really, I've got to be 100% on a scoring chance. If a referee misses a call on a scoring chance, I give him the benefit of the doubt because he really wants to make sure that that's the case. And I hope that will be the case. But again, so a guy's chasing another player on a breakaway and the stick is comes in from behind and does it make contact with his shin pad? Does it get his hands? Does it get stick on stick? Those are the things that officials in playoffs are going over in their mind a second time compared to the regular season where they see it, call it.
Do you care which official you get? You have a couple of referees assigned to the game. Do you care about that? Does that matter?
It does matter. And I think that the coaches specifically know because they have more of a relationship with the officials. The players will talk about it and they will understand that certain referees focus and prioritize different situations. And as much as you get a book on the other team, not as much, but you still have a book on the officials. You do. If you're the head coach, any team, you have a book on the officials. And you don't, I don't even know if you share that information with the team because you don't want to put things in their mind. Mm. But I think you have it in the back of your mind. And when it happens in the game, you're prepared for it.
When, let's say you get an official that you know calls plays a certain way that you don't necessarily like, and maybe it's toward a superstar player. Do you go to that official as the coach beforehand and say something to him?
What you do is you go to your general manager. Ah. And the general manager, before every series starts, both general managers meet with a series supervisor. And I believe that conversation continues after and before every game of that series.
Okay.
I don't think you want to get into that face-to-face because it becomes personal. And then human nature, you know, is the referee during the game thinking, well, he thinks I call it this way, so I'm going to prove him wrong. You know, it's in the mind. Everyone's human.
Yeah.
But I think you give it to your GM and let him talk about it. That's where, again, that conversation with the McDavid, that's going to be interesting. It's really interesting.
It is. And you don't want to ride the official too badly, certainly not early on, right?
You know what? If there's something happens in a game that was discussed in that pre-series meeting or as you go game to game, meaning, oh, McDavid's getting held too much. Well, there's a hold and it's missed. Boom. Jay Woodcroft. He's going to be on the official. We talked about this before the series started. We talked about that. You know, same thing. Kopitar, you know, winning a faceoff and using strength and, but you know, he probably gets fouled. You know, like Shaq, right? Sure. Shaq was there. You know, he probably got fouled more, but he's a bigger, stronger guy. He plays a more physical style just by nature. Like Kopi's never goes out and hits anyone, but believe me, he carries guys on his back all night. So those are the types of things you're looking for. And that's, you know, that's something. Hey, watch it. You got to make sure that, you know, Nugent Hopkins isn't doing this to Kopi. Kopi's going to have guys on his back. We need that call too, just like McDavid.
Wonder how often and really, I wonder who the officiating supervisors are. Do you know who they are, by the way?
I don't. It changes from series to series. And there's also, I think, a representative that comes in from the actual league, from Toronto, from the hockey department that comes in and oversees things. And they schedule these meetings and they happen and they talk about things. And it's something that's part of the series. I don't think it never, ever gets. I don't think I've heard too much of a GM or a coach going out, you know, publicly during a series going, this is something we talked about and they're not calling. And when that happens, series over and that team's out.
It almost seems at that point like the series is fixed.
You go public, you're almost acknowledging the fact that you've lost the battle.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So that's one of the main topics going into the postseason that was discussed. The other one that I found interesting from the GM meetings last week was that they talked about LTIR manipulation. And we've seen in the past where people have suggested that that was a possibility. Specifically, I remember with the Tampa Bay Lightning, mm-hmm. when Nikita Kucherov was out for a large chunk of the season. It then frees up that money so that the team can go out and add other pieces. And then Kucherov, when he's able to play in the postseason, it's not affected by the salary cap. The salary cap is no longer a part of the equation at that point. The league said that they don't see, during the meetings, any issue with the salary cap being manipulated in any way. Do you?
No. Follow the rules.
And teams are abiding by them.
Or change it. So, again, that's the simple thing. I think they're abiding by it. For a guy who had surgery on his hip and then 5 years later had his hip replaced, knowing what Kucherov had surgery on his hip, to even get into a game, I think that's phenomenal. But I know it happens more and more nowadays, and the procedures are probably a little bit better. But no, you know what? I'm probably in the minority here. If the rule is written the way it is and you abide by that rule, I don't think you're hiding anyone. I don't think you're keeping anyone else out of the lineup on purpose. If you can do that and still make the playoffs, more power to you.
How would you change it? Would you change it?
I don't lose sleep over it. Let me put it that way. The obvious thing to do is the 23-man roster that's available, the 20-man roster that's available for each playoff game has to be under $81 million. Whatever it is, and you know that might go up and down year to year. That's the easy way to do it. And that can change from game to game, right? Different guys come in and out, but you have to manage it that way. That would be fine. I don't lose any sleep over it. I know there's a lot of people that are up, they're doing this, and Vegas is hiding this guy. And No, I don't think they are. I would find it very... There has to be some validity to these injuries. Otherwise, a player is going to go, I want to play.
Right.
With Kucherov, again, hip surgery, that's pretty serious. There's pop. Maybe he could have come back 5 games from the end of the regular season. Maybe. But to let him rehab longer is probably more beneficial. And that's I don't have a problem with it. And if they change the rule, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think it's sour grapes for people that complain about it now.
And it does get complained about constantly all over. And you just mentioned it with Vegas, people saying the same thing this year because they've been without a number of different guys, but Stone in particular and Pacioretty as well, and they keep getting hurt over and over again. Right. But as you said,
if they don't make it, what happens if they don't?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't hold those guys out. They didn't.
No.
They're hurt.
And maybe that's because, or the argument was a little bit more substantial with Kucherov because Tampa Bay was so good. And they said, well, they're going to make it anyway. So it doesn't matter. But
get more power to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Right.
If you can have 23 guys on your roster during the regular season that fall under the salary cap and you have your 8 best players not playing and you still make the playoffs, that's organizational depth.
Mm. Yeah. And they found a way. And they won a Stanley Cup with him. And
you have a limit on salaries. Yeah, they won 2 cups.
Right.
But there is a limit of contracts, right? Is it 50? That you can have in your organization. So it's not like they're extending that. It's not like they're making it 55. No, you still have to have 50, and that's all you can go to.
Yeah, that's fair. And by the way, speaking of salary cap, you brought that up. It's going up $1 million next year. It's been a flat cap, but it's going to go up $1 million next year.
So the broadcaster's salary cap is going...
I don't know if you're going to get any more. I know I'm not getting any more. It took enough just to get this amount. So, but $1 million, does it... mean anything to you as far as health of the league?
It means something to me with the health of hopefully the COVID situation. I mean, that's devastating to any industry that relies on live events, mass events, 18,000 people. That shows me that they did a heck of a job to play 54 games or 56 games, whatever they did. And they did it. Now we're back. As far as I'm aware, within the Kings, I think the Kings basically were given till the end of the 22-23 season to get back to 100%. I think teams are getting to that point quicker. And that, to me, economically, is good.
It is, right. Anytime.
And that little increase, because didn't they originally talk about a flat cap for like 5 years?
Right.
So maybe this is just an example of, you know, whether the new TV deal has, you know, it kicks in and they're getting some, but they knew that was going to be there. But maybe sponsors are jumping back on board, maybe quicker than people thought. Live attendance is getting to that point. I still think we see, you know, with the Kings, I think we see some really great crowds, and then you see some low crowds.
Right.
And I still think that's COVID related. It's how you're planning your entertainment schedule, and, you know, you're going out here tonight. But let's just hope that as many people as possible get back to work, and it looks like that's happening. Mm-hmm. And if it affects the NHL, good sign. That's good. That's good. I'm
right.
Maybe ahead of schedule.
Yeah, maybe ahead of schedule. You're right. And I was at the game on Monday. I think it was Monday against Calgary, if I'm not mistaken. And great crowd. Great crowd. Excitement and energy. And you felt it in the building. And I got to say, sitting in the stands, I don't know if you noticed this from the high perch, fewer people wearing masks, I thought. More comfort. And this isn't a COVID conversation necessarily, but since you brought it up, the idea of people wanting to go out and be together again. It's really nice. It really is.
Unless you're in a gas line right now and trying to get gas, and then
you're
mad at the price, and then you're mad at the guy taking too long. And then because we haven't interacted with humans in 2.5 years. So now we're getting back to normal. And we've got to brush up on our interpersonal skills.
Yeah, you're right.
I remember when COVID first hit and we were talking about, you know, man, the first responders and the delivery people and the garbage men, you know, still had to do their job, and they were doing it. And everyone was leaving them bottles of wine, picking up stuff. And, oh, what a great job. Here's some candy. What do you? Well, let's try to keep that going even after it ends.
Oh, absolutely.
Not going to happen. I was in the line the other day and someone was yelling at me because I was taking too long.
People forgot. forgot to be nice again. It's back to normal LA, right? That's the way that we treat each other. But no, you're right.
So I just honked my horn when they went by, and I just waved and I said, you know, thank you. You know,
kill them with kindness, right? Isn't that what they say? By the way, and
wasn't sarcastic at all.
No, not even one bit. It is number one. It's remarkable, though. You're right that they played as many games as they did during those times. The ability for all the leagues,
bubble,
not just the NHL,
that bubble 2 years ago,
right?
No one in the building. That's
remarkable.
It's remarkable. It's you know, the planning, I know that when the COVID protocols came out, I read that document and it was so comprehensive. And kudos.
Yeah. When you have governments telling you you're going to do it this way or you're not going to do it, and they were able to pull it off. It really is unbelievable stuff. One other big topic that came up during the GM meetings last week that I wanted to ask you about. World Cup of Hockey sounds like it's coming back. There weren't really a lot of details about it. The only thing that I remember reading specifically was that they're no longer going to have a Team North America. That's gone. It's just going to be countries. They didn't say which countries specifically yet, but just countries. So that's one thing. Otherwise, excited for it? You into it?
I'm into it. I'm into it more so than the Olympics. I think that the players are into the Olympics more than World Cup of Hockey. Completely old-fashioned, and I know it is unrealistic, but... And the reason it happened was because some countries were not, even though the players that were involved or the athletes were involved were not considered professional, they were still getting stipends from their governments and things of that sort. But I still have that. I would have no problem in hockey if, I'm laughing saying it, if it was amateur, if it was amateurs playing. I would have no problem with that. And that's where I think the World Cup to me is it's best on best. It's back to the country versus country. I can find as much enjoyment out of that as I can in the Olympics. The one thing I like about the Olympics is that it gives me 3 weeks off.
It's all about you. It's always about you. So selfish. But you competed internationally. It's rewarding, isn't it, as a player?
It is different. Because you're bringing together a group of guys very quickly. I played in the World Championships again when the players playing come from teams that weren't making the playoffs that year. And that's the way it's kind of done now. But for a group to come together, it just rings in the back of your head how We can get into the analytics. We can get into the X's and O's, but hockey's hockey. You get a bunch of guys together, they play. They come up with a system, and yeah, all the systems are so tight. And coaches have to think. I think nowadays, more so than the past, coaches tailor the systems to their personnel. Was it Bill Belichick? Is he like a systems coach? Doesn't matter who's playing. You know, doesn't matter.
You can't beat a system.
Yeah, so he's in. I think in hockey, if you have Connor McDavid, you can change your system a little bit.
When you put the uniform on, it's the old saying, the cliche of it. When you put the sweater on, it's the front of the jersey, and now I'm competing for my country, and whether it's hatred or dislike or disdain for the other country. Did you feel that when you competed internationally?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. And the biggest rivalry was Canada-Russia because of a series. We've talked about this before that happened in 1972, the Summit Series, and it started there. But to me, it's Canada-USA. It's just because you're neighbors. And to a certain extent, as a naturalized American citizen now, to a certain extent, the Americans are taking over. So I think a lot of people still believe that if Canada could ice four teams, like their fourth team would still finish fifth, in the tournament, whether it's an Olympics or – still, it's that Canada-US is still – there's a, and it comes through more so in the women's game, but I think there's a huge rival. I did an interview, World Cup of Hockey, three game series, best 2 out of 3, Canada, USA in the final. I remember interviewing Brendan Shanahan between periods. I think it was game 3. So they each won one game. That's when US came back late.
This was
Amonte scores and some of Brett Hull scores. And they win the game in Montreal.
1996 is we're talking about, right?
So yep. I'm doing the intermissions and sideline, ringside for sports channels or USA something. And I'm doing this interview with him, and he gave great answers, but he was shaking. I've heard about like when Grand Prix racers or IndyCar racers, when they get to the pits, just sitting there, standing still, they're going crazy because they're used to going 200 miles an hour. And that just, he was like chomping at the bit. He was salivating. He wanted to get out there for the third period. I thought he gave great answers, but I was sitting right beside him and I could not believe the intensity. And again, he's playing for Canada. The U.S. goes on to beat Canada in that third period to win the World Cup. But that to me brought the U.S. women's, Canadian women's rivalry in the Olympics is just phenomenal. Yeah. And I think it's there in the guys' game too.
1996 World Cup, what you're talking about, is for me the most heated international competition I've ever seen. Now, you talk about 72 Summit Series, and I've watched videos, but it's before my time. Even 1980, when the U.S. won, before my time.
But that series, 96, if that we have the year correct, that was still, physical hockey was still involved.
Yeah.
Billy Guerin, Walt Tkachuk, Brendan Shanahan, I think even Claude Lemieux was on that. Like, they built teams to not the highest skill always, like an all-star game. These guys were going at it. I thought Brendan Shanahan, I don't know if he ever remembers that. I bet he doesn't. I don't think he remembers that 2 minutes. But he was shaking to get back into the game.
Is it hard to get physical in a game that you're not being paid for? I mean, the pride thing obviously was huge.
I'm not at that level. I'm not. I was an NHL player, which puts me in a pretty good category of athlete.
Right.
But I wasn't in the World Cup or Olympic status. Juniors, yes. So, for instance, like the March Madness. So you have college basketball players. I was at that level. I was the top of the world. And you felt that you're competing, and that's it. You're competing. You want to be the best. And it is different when you're playing for your country. It does. It does. It changes. It does. But I swear I never, ever, ever thought about money. Making it or not making it. Never. Not nose contact. Not at all. That would didn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Even playing playoffs games, you would get a bonus, you know, further you go in the playoffs. We had no idea what the bonus was. We got a check at the end of a playoff series, but I had no idea what it was.
Because you just love the game and that you're there to play the game. And
That's not me. That's everyone.
Right.
That's everyone. But again, you go to Olympic or World Cup level. I just equate it because I never won a Stanley Cup. I watched a team win two Stanley Cups. And I've said it before. I think it's worth saying again. Mm. Dean Lombardi's five categories: journeyman, average, star, superstar, winner. In those tournaments, all those guys are winners.
Yeah.
And they're looking at it at a different way than I did. I hoped I would got to that level. I did as a junior, but never as a pro. But I can see it in them. I can understand why a Jeff Carter, they want to win so bad. So did I. But then they learned. They have the skill or they fit a role. And then they learn through experience. Unfortunately, I never, at the NHL level, never got past we got past the first round once. And, you know, I remember Pat Quinn as a coach coming in to the room. Guys, stop gripping your sticks. Like, he'd been through it, but a lot of our team had not. And there's something to experience. There is. And the only way to get it is to do it. You can talk about it. A veteran player can come to you and say, or Pat Quinn can come in the room and say, you know, stop gripping your stick. Go through it. And that's how you learn.
Oh, now you got me fired up. I'm ready for this World Cup. I was sort of into it before. I love it when it's happening. And now I'm salivating for it. I'm into it.
It seems to come. And I think they talked about changing the dates of it too.
If
I'm not mistaken, to make it. But I like, it just seemed in the past that when they did the preseason tournament, I think it happens in September, I just felt I didn't have the NHL in my back of my mind yet. Like when the Olympics happen, you get 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off, but you're always preparing for the next game and, you know, what happens after. This one, you had the entire season in front of you and these guys were coming in for it. And I just love that timing. I personally enjoyed the World Cup more just for a lot of different reasons. And one of that's the timing of when it happens.
Yeah.
Which may be changing.
Right. But it is an awesome, awesome event. And now you got me thinking about 96 too and Mike Richter. And I know if you're from Canada, you're thinking, no.
I was doing the sideline, ringside. And I had to go prepare for the winning team's post-game interview in their locker room. So I was standing outside the Canadian locker room. But I'm walking down in Montreal form, walking through the tunnels and trying to get underneath. And by the time I get from my spot to the interview spot, U.S. scores two times and takes the lead and wins. I didn't know that because I didn't have a thing with me. I didn't my audio wasn't working in my earpiece, so I didn't hear the. And so I get there, boom! I have to run right back, go right to the other side because they had in Montreal Forum, the dress rooms are on complete different sides of the ice. Mm. So I had to go all the way around again and get there. I missed it. I missed that comeback. Like, I thought the Canadian team was winning. And as an announcer, I didn't care. I mean, I probably, you know, if Canada would win, I was, you know, probably again feeling more better that way. But I just missed it. I missed the most exciting part of the best freaking series I've ever seen.
I was just going to say, but are you in awe as you're watching even parts of it, of the talent on the ice, even when you're at that point?
Wow. And because of the job I was doing, I was ringside. These guys are huge and they are fast. And to understand how fast the decisions have to be made is incredible. It's a different level. It is a different level. These guys play at a different level.
And that was it one goal at that point for Canada? And what do you had Lemieux and
maybe
Gretzky.
Brodeur,
what an unreal team to see that compilation of talent. And they got beat.
So the Americans, I think how we started this this tangent is Americans are getting good.
Yeah.
Austin Matthews.
Completely
good sniper.
Shocked the world in that turn, especially after 87 and the team saw what Canada could do in an international setting, which is, I'm sure in Canada, that's probably looked at as maybe the best series other than 72. Okay, so enough on that tangent, I guess. A couple other things I want to get to. One happened right before the trade deadline, and we haven't talked about this yet. There was an interesting deal that was supposed to go down that didn't wind up going down, in which the Vegas Golden Knights were going to ship Evgeny Dadonov, a forward, over to the Anaheim Ducks. It was done for salary cap purposes for the most part because they're trying to stay under the cap. Well, what the teams involved didn't know at the time was Dadonov had a no trade list, and it apparently was or may not have been filed properly at the time, but the Ducks were on said no trade list. And so there was this weird, what was it, 48-hour period, 24-hour period, where it was in limbo. And no one knew, is the trade going to go through and not going to go through? And ultimately, Dadonov said, no, I didn't want to go
there.
First
of all, not a good look on the league.
Yeah.
At the same time, my opinion, completely overblown because of what we're probably going to get into now, the reasons for that. But yeah, it wasn't a good look. It's something that administratively should be understood 100% and executed 100%. And obviously it wasn't.
Right. Some people were saying the paperwork was filed properly, and others were saying, no, it was not filed properly. And ultimately, the league said, no, yes, it was. It was
filed.
Who
has to tell who?
Right.
And shouldn't it all be available for everyone, that knowledge, to know?
Should it? In your opinion, should everyone know who's on who's no trade list?
Not until it's collectively bargained. Not until the players give up that right. If I'm a player, I don't want that no trade list out there. I think it only gives a chance for negative connotations coming back at you, backlashes of fan groups, understandably so. Now, from what I understand with Dadonov, is he had Anaheim there because it was a Californian team and he didn't like the tax structure in California. So what I say to him is get in line.
Right.
but so it had nothing to do with hating Anaheim or didn't think they had a chance. No, he was just looking economically at, okay, how do I protect myself if I happen to be in a trade issue? But that's collectively bargained. The issue becomes, if you do divulge that information to Central Registry, there is a chance it's going to get out. There is a chance because the more hands that come in contact with that, the more chances someone's going to leak it. Now, it can be leaked already, right? Agents and GMs are probably the guys that could leak it.
Sure.
And if you're going to go, that's probably where you start for a leak. But they're trying to protect that secrecy as much as possible. And as a player, I understand that. Again, if it was collectively bargained, okay, what are you going to give the players in lieu of us changing our mind on these lists? Because I think it's something that it's a personal issue. And right now, I have no problem. Even though it created an administrative faux pas, and the league kind of took it on the chin there for a couple days, we're back, right?
We are.
No one, the sun came up the next day.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a huge, at least in my mind. Dadonov stays on Vegas and filling the net.
The next two games.
What the hell is he doing?
Lights out, yeah.
Let's get him to Anaheim.
I mean, you have to think the Vegas front office was thinking right afterwards, well, thank goodness. Knock on wood. He just won us two games.
And let's applaud his mental toughness. That could have been a distraction for him internally. And now I got to go back into the room. And I'm sure it was addressed internally. We probably didn't know whether Kelly McCrimmon went down and talked, as the GM of Vegas to the team with a coach there, with the entire group there. Everyone. Trainers, everyone. That's something you address. Hey, we screwed up. Someone screwed up. He's back. But Dadonov himself. That's impressive. That's focus.
I was going to say.
That's just going out there and doing your job. That is a great example of professionalism, where you don't let anything exterior bother what you're doing on the ice. And I applaud him for that. I just don't applaud him for doing it for the team he does do it.
But there had to be a feeling of, they don't want me, right? From his perspective?
Well, he knew, hockey's a business. So he knows, okay, they need to open up space because they're going to have guys coming back off of injuries. And like we were talking earlier, they need that cap space to bring them back. Well, you were right earlier. It was a trade made specifically to open up $5.58 million to whatever he makes and allow a little bit more flexibility for the Golden Knights to get players back. I don't think he took it as they don't want me. I think he looked at it as this is part of the business, and this is part of the reason why we are so well compensated. because we have to give up that right sometime. You are traded. You are moved. And your family has to go through it. But because you're so well compensated, you realize, and he proved it. He was extremely professional.
Any concern about the teammates from, I guess not maybe his teammates, but, you know, the Anaheim Ducks. I who knows what people are thinking about, you know, with this player?
You know, it would be more Vegas for me. It would be like, okay, we have him now, and now we can't bring back Pacioretty now because
he's holding us down. He
ends up with 2 game-winning goals, and so he's not slowing anyone down. He's winning them games, but I think players completely understand the situation.
Yeah,
and I think that they understand it's a economic business-related decision, and I don't think they hold grudges at all. I don't, you know. I've never been in a conversation where someone would say, why is he still here? I mean, we tried to get – no. He's on your wing that night. You're getting him the puck. He's getting you the puck. You're going to play.
Well, now they can manipulate LTIR, and they can hold those guys. I'm just kidding, of course.
Absolutely. Manipulate, just don't break.
That's right. As long as you stay within the rules, it all counts. One more topic I want to hit with you this week, and that's Ducks Coyotes. Which from Friday, April 1st,
right.
For the folks that didn't see this, Anaheim wins that game 5-0. And so you're thinking, nothing big could have happened. Well, it became a major topic, certainly for about a 1 week period. So what essentially happened was, and I'll give again just the cliff notes of this whole thing. Trevor Zegras pulls off a Michigan again. He's great at it. Maybe the best in the league at it. So talented. And it's phenomenal that he's able to score these goals. And apparently nobody can stop it. He scores a goal. And again, the Ducks are up big in this game. We know how bad the Coyotes have been all season. So we'll move to the third period. Zegras is attacking the net on a play, and he pokes at the goaltender a little bit, something that we see very often. Well, the veteran Jay Beagle jumps in, and Jay essentially jumps Trevor Zegras and pops him a little bit with his stick. Then Troy Terry comes in defense of Trevor Zegras. And Troy Terry's not a very big guy, certainly not a fighter. He's not Delorier. He's a goal scorer and took offense to what Jay Beagle had done. And then Beagle winds up popping him in the face a number of times. I believe he still had his gloves on at that point. And he just punched him a number of times and Terry goes down face first on the ice. He's bleeding. He winds up having to leave the game. Tyson Nash, who is doing television work for the Coyotes, he's been their analyst now for many, many years. And actually, I've spoken to him many times. Very nice guy. He winds up saying over the air this.
That's the problem sometimes with these young players. You want to embarrass guys and you want to skill it up. You better be prepared to get punched in the mouth.
What are your thoughts on what Tyson Nash had to say?
My thoughts are this. If his job is to bring the player's perspective, I think he did. He was a enforcer, instigator, shift disturber. So that was, he was probably involved in 27,000 of those types of situations in his career. If, the thing that caught my attention was, well, I see the smirks. I see them coming back and laughing to the bench. I think he was between the benches, right? He was ice level. Mm-hmm. So, and he works for the Coyotes. I understand where he's coming from. He's not happy about, so he kind of downplayed, right? And he said, basically, paraphrasing, we just heard it, but there's sometimes a team feels they're being embarrassed, and sometimes they feel the other team is helping that embarrassment. How I felt watching it would be completely different than him. He works for the Coyotes. He has a vested interest in that. I bet you an emotional interest. The score has something to do with it. If there's anything in hockey that still stands as far as unwritten rules that you don't jab a goalie, Zegras' jab wasn't that bad. It wasn't. But it was after the whistle, or if it was at the same time as the whistle, it was one of those things that you see, right? There was nothing different about that, right? If that happens, 99 times out of 100, there's going to be a scrum. There is going to be a scrum, no question. I credit Terry for coming in and trying to help. There's two situations here. The one is the Tyson Nash and the criticism of him. And I think he was doing his best to give the Coyotes players' point of view. The other aspect is, you know, is Beagle, should he have stopped? That's where I'm Troy Terry, okay? I didn't fight. I got involved a couple times. When you do get involved, you have to be prepared for the worst. I applaud him for standing up for Zegras. I don't think the Michigan had anything to do with the play. The Michigan is, but, you know, Tyson did say, if they're going to skill it up, well, that might be part of it, but hey. Zegras has proved it's an effective hockey play. And until that, because now, so teams might think, I've got to go now run behind the net because he's going to score from there. Well, you do that, someone is going to be open in front. So there's a whole bunch of hockey plays that are going to be related to this. No problem with that whatsoever. Actually, I know it wouldn't happen this way in a game, but what he did at the All-Star game, I cannot fathom the skill it took. There was glue on that puck and stick. There's no question in my mind. There was magnets.
Pine
magnets
tar.
Were used in that play. George Brett was called out, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
But there's also been talk, and I think this is where Tyson, whether it happened in that game or not, you know, are they cocky? Are these young players on Anaheim cocky? And I don't think Troy Terry fits that, right? I don't think he is. Unfortunately, he came to aid for Zegras. I think a lot of the negative thoughts towards Jay Beagle, I think that's – you get involved in a fight. I've heard, he's got to realize that Troy Terry didn't even drop his gloves. No, you don't. You're going – I heard Mike Rupp talk about it, okay, NHL radio, because he was involved in that situation. He said when you get into a scrap – you're in defense mode, right? You have to go all out. Otherwise, you're going to be. And he said, Mike said this. He said, I was one punched. And I was looking up. When I got up, I was looking up the ceiling of the rink. And he said, well, every time you get into an altercation, now you better be prepared to defend yourself. And you keep punching and you keep punching until, you know, did it happen a little bit too long? Was he hitting him when he's down? Did he know Terry was hurt when he kept punching? Like,
you didn't even think about it.
I don't know if you can separate that. If you could ever get a player to admit saying, okay, I know he was hurt and I wanted to give him another one. Well, I don't think you'll ever hear a player, but I can't. I just think it's the Tyson Nash comments were more of an issue with a lot of people than the actual incident, at least with players. Teemu Selanne, he tweeted out after. He kind of said, hey, we've got to get tougher as a team here in Anaheim to make sure these things don't happen. He didn't say anything about Jay Beagle. He didn't say, he understands. Teemu wasn't a fighter, right? But if you're going to stick your nose in,
be ready.
You got to be ready.
Anaheim, of course, traded away all of their big guys and all of their protectors, DeLaurier being the main guy there. So they don't even have a guy. So maybe Troy Terry felt like, you know what, if I don't get in there.
Troy Terry did exactly what you want your teammate to do. Unfortunately, Beagle injured him,
right,
which is not good. But it's part of what happens in those exchanges. Again, if you're going in, very similar to Tom Wilson and Artturi Panarin. Panarin comes in, jumps on his back in a five-on-five scrum. And then, you know, Wilson picks him up and throws him down to the ice.
And then punches him.
Well, you can't. No, you don't. In that one, and does Beagle know who it is? Does he really?
Right.
I think the tough guys know the tough guys. And Jay Beagle is probably one of them. You know, he's a guy that's played a long time. He's never, ever done anything that's been, I think, considered. Maybe he has, you know. Over his career, maybe he played mostly in the East, so I didn't get a chance to see.
But he's not a fighter.
No, so
yeah.
But you know, just ease up on him. He's up on it. And if he did punch, and I know there's discussion about should the linesman have gotten in quicker. And that's a whole part of it. You know, when do that linesman recognize there's a mismatch? And if they do, as a player, you want them to protect the players. You want them to get in there. How quickly they did it, they didn't do it, all those types of things. You know, the surrounding thing is this. It's back to the John Tortorella comments when first Michigan and all that, or it was actually the pass over top of the net to Sonny Milano, not the Michigan, but
yeah, the lob play.
The lob play. If my perception is that the perception is, how's that? That Trevor Zegras is building a reputation for enjoying cocky. Let's just say cocky.
Mm-hmm.
You need that confidence. You need that. Good. Let him do it. I have no problem. But someone has talked to him on his team already and said, hey, Trev, if you're going to do these things, you got to back off a little bit. Or at some point, you have to step up and protect yourself.
Yeah, start lifting weights.
Someone's going to come after you.
Right.
That's just part of that's part of every skilled player's issue. Mm-hmm. They're going to go out there and get you, and you have to know how to start learning how to protect yourself. If they have been showing up other teams, then that's part of what Tyson was talking about. It's part of the Ducks, Teemu Selanne. I think Pat Verbeek, he had to make those moves. He said when he was hired, we're not letting anyone walk to free agency. So he got rid of those guys. Anaheim will rebuild that part of their team up again. They will. They're caught right now without any tough guys. So the Kings have played the last, 3 weeks without Pepe Lemieux. So, you don't have any. You have to learn how to adjust your game. They'll get there. They're gonna reintroduce toughness back into their lineup. And I know what Tame was saying, and he's saying, hey, let's get those guys as quick as possible.
Yeah, we need a few to protect these skilled guys because they're gonna keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I do want to ask you one thing, by the way, before we move on, because I have another part of this I want to ask you about. The gloves. Is it okay to hit a guy with gloves on? Is that looked at as a no-no?
I think generally speaking, it is. It used to be. I think maybe less so now. The thumb part of a hockey glove is like the steel toe of a work boot. It's not like you're putting gloves on to carry the Stanley Cup, those white gloves. These things are there to protect. And that thumb part can have a very hard plastic insert, which, if you hit someone with it, it can do a lot of damage, perhaps more so than a fist without a glove on it. Gloves nowadays they're made a little maybe they're not as protective, but I think it is just it was a safety issue, and that's why you drop your gloves. You also drop your gloves again to hold on a little bit better, right? You can grab a jersey, you can grab a shoulder pad, an elbow pad, and you can really do that, and it helps you in your altercation. But I don't have enough experience, but I've heard tough guys talk about you don't have time to figure out whether he has his gloves on or not. You've agreed. It appeared that the instigation of the whole thing was the poke by Zegras, which wasn't that much, but it becomes magnified because it's 5-0. Do you need to be doing that when it's 5-0? Should Zegras even have that in his mind? Oh, it's 5-0. Well, but if you're going to do that, you know a scrum's going to develop. And then Terry does his job as a good teammate. But then he found himself in a bad position. And I just don't. If Beagle hit him when he was down, I would like to think he would never do that again. But as far as how it all started, it's just unfortunate that Troy Terry found himself in that position. It would have been better if it was a tougher guy, a guy who was more experienced in that area. But once he does agree to participate in that altercation,
look out.
I don't look for Jay Beagle to back off.
Yeah, and Jay did not, and that's how things turned out. So it's one thing, by the way, for a broad.
I just want to bring up,
I've
said it before.
Good.
One of the best ever, Marty McSorley.
Mm-hmm.
The best. We knew about him when, his guys are getting run or he's protecting Gretzky and all that. When his team was up 5-0, he'd be going at guys just because he's thinking about the next game. He's thinking about the upcoming playoff series. In 3 weeks, you're going to play against that team. He's going after the best players. He was so good at that instigation part where he, again, and it, if you don't cross the line, can you intimidate?
It's tough. Tough to say yes.
So the way you intimidate, I guess, would be over a long period of time and you just continue to show up, continue to show up, continue to get. But I know, I think Mark Messier, there was a conversation when Eric Lindros came to the league. And Eric's a big guy, right? Much like the Kobe Shaq thing.
Sure.
He's getting guys, he's dragging guys all around. And I guess he talked to Mess, who was on another team and might have been at one of the best-on-best tournaments for Canada. And he said, Mess, what do I do here? He says, you're going to have to take a cross-check. You're going to have to take five-game suspension. You're going to have to buy yourself some room here. So you have sometimes that. I don't think Jay Beagle was thinking about that at all.
Right.
I think he was just – he was just upset with the situation of with a 5-0 lead going out. And the two parts are, did Tyson Nash just say something so honest that everyone hated him for it? Or as a broadcaster, should he have phrased it differently?
Skill it up. That was
I think he was speaking from the heart, which is not always the most well-received situation.
Right. And people these days like to see skill, it seems. And so they're against anyone who wants to see the skill taken out of the game. Now, it's one thing for a broadcaster to say what he did, in this case, Tyson Nash. It's another thing for a player to call out another player, something that we don't always see. And what I'm referring to is an incident that took place between the Canadiens and the Senators. This is from Tuesday night. Two teams played. Tim Stützle, who's a wonderfully talented forward for the Ottawa Senators, apparently has gotten under the skin of Brendan Gallagher, who's a tough guy, not a big guy, but a tough guy, gets in front of the net. He's known
gritty
for that. Very gritty. He's the definition of
competitor.
Gritty, as a matter of fact. Competitor. He'll take a shot to the face if he has to get a goal that's deflected in the net. Well, Brendan Gallagher, during his post-game media conference after the game, said,
you know what? When I was 10 years old, our coach had a rule. If you lay on the ice, and we didn't have trainers, if the coach had to come on the ice and get you, you know, you're too hurt to play. You had to sit for minimum three shifts. He's a great player. Played against him for 2-3 years now. More than half the games we've played against him, he's laid on the ice, and he's right back out there next shift. He lays on the ice. He acts like he's hurt. He sells a call. He's on the ice that same power play. You know, there's kids watching. We're role models. If I was a teammate of his, I'd tell him to smarten up. You know, it's just not a good look. Very talented player, very good player. Needs to stop laying on the ice. It's embarrassing.
What are your thoughts on what Brendan Gallagher had to say?
I think it's a part of the game that I think most players hate, which is any embellishment that becomes part of a player's reputation. And according to Gallagher, because of multiple games played against Ottawa, Montreal versus Ottawa, he feels that Tim Stützle is exaggerating at times and then boom, popping up and playing the next shift, he's back on the power play. So that's one of those, for the best interests of the game, we don't want that in our game. We don't want soccer, right? We don't want a kick in the shin and then roll and roll and roll five times and roll and you stay down. They got a penalty kick. Oh, I'm up. I'm ready. And I played soccer enough and I watched soccer enough to know that it's inbred in their game. What hockey's trying to do is keep that out of their game. They don't want that. And I think to a certain extent, it is European related. Soccer being ingrained in the culture of Europeans. So they accept that, much like hockey, Canadians accept fighting. Why is fighting in the game? Well, it has its purpose. So rolling around in soccer has its purpose. You only have one guy basically can call fouls. You have two linesmen that can help him out. So he can't see that whole field. So you got to make sure that he saw it. So you roll and you roll and you cry and you cry. Well, hockey, we don't want that. I think if Spitzer gets a reputation for that, and again, Eastern Conference, I don't know, I don't see him enough. If he does have that reputation, that is hard. That might be the most difficult reputation to get rid of anything. Once you become a diver or an embellisher, that's tough to get rid of. To a certain extent here, Brendan Gallagher is stepping up for the game. I think he was respectful in his comments. Certainly respects this talent and skill of Stützle. But I think he's saying something that, and you're, to your point, this is player to player on another team. I think Tim Stützle is still young enough to get rid of that reputation, but Brendan Gallagher, I think Brendan was not concerned about the win or the loss. I think he was concerned. I'll be honest with you. I've seen him play enough to know that, and I use the word competitor. Everyone's a competitor. But certain guys' style lead you to believe that they're more physically involved, and Gallagher's one of those guys. I think he's just trying to protect that side of the game. And I think the way it was presented, if we just read literally what he said, you might have a different... If you listen to it, if you see it, I think you see a veteran player saying, hey, kid, let's keep this out of our game. And the conversations, Gallagher, do happen. Teammates do pull other teammates aside and go, hey, kid.
Don't do that.
If you're going to do it, Tom McClellan, we were just talking to him recently because of all similar situations. And Thomas Hertl, his first NHL game, scores 4 goals in a blowout of the New York Rangers. And the last goal he scores ends up on a breakaway. I think at the time made it like 6-7-1, and I could facts will be, but it was a big lead at the time. And on a breakaway, he goes between his legs and scores. Whew. That caught the attention of the hockey world. That is rubbing it in. Keep in mind, you got 82 games to play here. It's not just one game. Now, Thomas Hertl, I've heard him talk about it. He was a young kid. His parents were in attendance. He was just thrilled to get 4 goals in his first, like, just, if it wasn't his first game, it was early on in his career. Mm. And Todd said they had to take some shifts away from him. Just, hey, kid, let's understand that you don't want to be doing that too often, because there's a next game against that team. There's a next game. You're building bulletin board material. You're showing up. Brian Boucher, I've heard Brian talk about it on NHL radio, where he kind of laughs it off now. But, at the time, I'm sure he was not happy. The between-the-legs goals scored nowadays, like Tkachuk has 4 this year, I guess, those are plays used to protect the puck, down low around the crease. And you're not, if you don't go between your legs, you're exposing the puck and giving a better chance for the defender to stop you. This one was a breakaway.
Yeah.
Where, the game's already over and he decides. So, and this is a long time ago. But it's all of these things coming back. It's a great conversation. You don't light a fire. You don't throw gasoline onto a fire. You just don't. And I take Brendan Gallagher's comments in the context of who that player is and what reputation he has developed, Gallagher, throughout his career. Mm. And I think he has the right to say that. I think other guys maybe not, but I believe he has, my opinion. I think I believe him, and I give him the okay on that to say it, even though he's talking about a player on another team.
He has the credibility.
He has the credit, but he has that cachet built up.
No doubt about it. I'm waiting now for Zegras to do the crazy play from the All-Star game on a breakaway, which eventually I think we'll try. He'll try it. You know he's going to try it.
If he scores, great.
You better.
I'm just saying, though, they do not allow magnets on sticks, so that it would not allow.
The fix is in, according
to
Jim.
That was incredible. When I saw it, I said, that's fake.
Yeah.
I said, that puck is taped to his stick. I swear. And then I saw, I still don't believe it. How's that? I still don't believe what happened.
This was fun. I think we covered all of our main topics for the week. Stretch Drive is here. 3 weeks to go. As we said at the beginning of the show, knock on wood, I'm doing it right now. Hopefully this is made of wood that the Kings make a nice run here and get
it. Off my head right there.
That works. Jesse, you can do the same thing. I'm sure that thing's made of wood for sure.
It's interesting. It's great. It's. I would like to think the way, if the Kings can get back to anywhere near full health. But then there's going to be adjustment periods there, right, too. The guy's coming back, and Todd mentioned it the other day. In his experience, you can't bring them all back at the same time because then all of a sudden you have four guys that haven't played in 3 weeks or a month, and they're in the lineup at the same time. So you kind of sprinkle them back in. But the only guys I've seen in my career that come back and like they haven't missed a beat are the true superstars. Mm. Other guys, it's going to take them two games, three games before they're back up to speed. And, you know, it's tight. It's tight. It should be tight. It's a great... Man, is it going to be five from the Central and only three from the Pacific? Is it going to be 4-4? And that's why the Kings, you want to hold on to that third spot. And that's why Dodonov should be playing in Anaheim right now.
That's a good way to wrap up. By the way, bring back enforcers. I think this show has laid the groundwork for the need for enforcers again in the game. And who knows? Maybe they will be brought back more steadily. Jim, this was fun. Appreciate it. Enjoy the stretch drive. Jesse, you as well. See you, folks.